Monisha.
Monisha, do you guys remember?
Morning.
Let's start our meeting so as to try and make up with time, understanding that we have to rush for the budget today. Thank you. Can we bow our heads where we are? Thank you very much, and good morning to all our participants in the meeting, that is the stakeholders, honorable members, and also the officials that are present in our meeting. Honorable members, let's hear from Lindy whether do we do the quorum and maybe also acknowledge those that are present, our stakeholders or our presenters that are in the meeting, and also tell us who is in the meeting and who's not. She must also include the apologies in that. Thanks. Lindy?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, members and stakeholders that are present in this meeting, Chair. Today is the 21st of February.
Recording in progress.
I wish to confirm the following members that are present. We have you, Chair, Member Mvana, as the chairperson of this committee. We have Member Fanda Merve present. We have Member Peterson, who is with us. Member Bilankulu, Chair. We have Member Priet. We have Member Masango. The following apologies, Chair, were received this morning. Member Aris will arrive a bit late. She was flying from Joburg to Cape Town. As soon as she arrived in Cape Town, she will log in. Also, Member Manganye is attending a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Small Business. They will just elect the chairperson and just join the meeting immediately. Also, Chair Member Stock is not present. He will join the meeting about 9:30. He has a doctor's appointment. So those are the apologies and the confirmation of attendance, Chair. I also wish to confirm that we are correcting in terms of the rules of the National Assembly. The committee may proceed with its business and take decisions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lindy. And then what about the stakeholders?
Chair. We have four organizations that will be presenting their submissions today, Chair. We have Ilita Labandu. We have Professor T. Malebe from UWC. We have also Mr. Tony from COSATU. We also have Mr. Randemeyer, who is not joined the meeting as yet. The other three stakeholders have already joined the meeting, Chair. So they will make their oral presentation in a form of PowerPoint, and then one member will also read from his notes. Thank you very much, Chair. The first organization to present is Ilita Labandu, Chair.
Thank you, Lindy. Thank you very much. And we wish to welcome all participants, as I have already said. Because today we have to rush for the 12 buses, we won't be very long. I also am happy that they have managed to join us, and I wish them good luck. And as the president has already proclaimed the date of the election, but I wish all of us the best, and all organizations at least will hold hands together, knowing that it is very critical for the people of South Africa. Thank you very much. With those short welcoming, to our stakeholders and also our allies. I wish to say let's continue hold hands, and we hope that you will also assist a social development portfolio committee in all aspects. Then, Lindy, let's let's first adopt the agenda. Can you flight the agenda, Lindy? Thank you very much. There is the agenda. As I have already welcomed everybody and acknowledged their presence, we can go to apologies have already been done. We can go to the next adoption. That is the adoption of the agenda. Any member who can assist us in adopting the agenda as it has been proposed?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the agenda.
That's Honorable Keita.
Yes, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bilangulu. Then any seconder?
I will second, Chairperson. I will second the adoption of the minutes.
That's Honorable Lizette. I hear you by voices now. I don't see your hands in the gadget, but it's fine. I know who's talking and when. Thank you very much. The agenda has been adopted and seconded by Honorable Van der Merwe. Can we then, Lindy, proceed to the next item, which is the only one that we have come for, the public hearings of an older person's presentation by stakeholders. Can we give over to Ilitala Bandu, as we have heard that they are going to be the first one to start? Thank you very much. Are you ready, Ilitala Bandu? Over to you. The platform is yours.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
My name is Natai Chakapawa. I'm just going to switch off my video and keep the audio on, if that is okay, Chair.
Yes, that's allowed. At least we have seen you that you are not a robot. You are.
Thank you, Chair. On behalf of Ilitala Bandu, I would like to acknowledge the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Mvana, on the Social Development Committee, the members of the committee and all other distinguished guests who are on this platform. Ilitala Bandu was established in 1989, and it is a social justice community organization based in Gugulethu Township, Cape Town, with a specific focus on addressing violence against women, children, vulnerable groups, and supporting those affected by it. Its services include psychosocial services, legal and policy advocacy services, educational and outreach services, as well as community nutrition and development services. This is accomplished through individual and family counseling, providing emergency accommodation for women and their children, skills training, empowerment, and capacity building workshop. The scope of Ilitala Bandu's work is centered around meeting the needs of communities that are affected by high levels of violence and limited socioeconomic opportunities. The violence that is perpetrated against women denies women in both townships and rural areas an opportunity and the legal right to live in an environment that is healthy and conducive for them to thrive. We note in our work that gender-based violence has crippled most communities in South Africa, and we have seen also how over the years the plight faced by women and children in the form of abuse, secondary victimization, and trauma suffered by those who are directly and indirectly impacted by this pandemic is ever increasing. While we acknowledge that the prevalence of violence and all forms of abuse on women, children and the vulnerable is not something that is a problem to South Africa, but a worldwide epidemic, we welcome attempts to rectify where there has been a failure to implement strategies in addressing this violence in our society, and we will always promote the advancement of the implementation of the National Strategy Against Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. We welcome the purpose of this bill, which is to amend the Older Persons Act of 2006 by the insertion of the new definitions and new provisions relating to the monitoring and evaluation of all services to older persons, the removal of older persons to temporary care without a court order, to tighten up the existing implementation and compliance measures, and to effect some textual amendments for greater clarity and to provide for other matters. The organization sees various cases involving older vulnerable persons, and while the organization takes various steps to encourage prompt reporting of incidents, there is such a poor coordination between social services, law enforcement agencies, to effectively respond to cases of elder abuse. Our submission is as follows. Section 1, regarding the definitions. We welcome the insertion of the new and improved definitions, which will help ensure that services provided to older persons meet established standards of quality. There have been deficiencies because of limitations in definitions of these services received by older persons, and the bill does highlight corrective measures to improve them so that older persons receive the support and care they need in a manner that respects their dignity and rights. There is an emphasis in understanding the changing needs of older persons as they age and adapting services accordingly so that the best practices are adhered to. We also take cognizance of the improvement in the assessment of the definition of older persons to include any person over 60 years, irrespective of gender. This is sufficient, we believe, to cover the concerns often problematic in ensuring that all older persons will be equally entitled to benefits and protections. In poor communities, elder males face many challenges, and to the recognized age of 65 places serious limitations on their access to benefits. Section 2 on the objectives. We welcome the recognition and provision for the specific needs and preference of older persons so that services can be tailored to meet the diverse requirements of the South African elderly population. Preventative measures against abuse means there is an effort to ensure that a society that respects the rights and well-being of elderly persons is being fostered. On implementation, section 3. We welcome the contribution that must be done by various government entities, including stakeholders who contribute to this space, who must be coordinated so as to provide integrated services, thus ensuring accountability for the services that must be delivered. Sections 4 and 5 on the application and general principles. This is also welcomed as it establishes indicators and benchmarks that make it possible to assess the effectiveness and efficiency of the services for elderly persons. The identification of an area of improvement relating to harmful traditional practices, including witchcraft accusations, which may affect the welfare, the health, life and dignity of that older person, addresses the shortcomings that have been prevalent, especially in certain communities where the community has taken the law into their own hands and brought insufferable harm to those elderly persons accused of such. There is still stigma attached to some of the age-related illnesses, and as such, older persons who suffer from age-related illnesses such as dementia are labeled witches, with some older persons having been killed as a result of this labeling. The development and compliance. The insertions of sections A, 7A and 7B, which highlights provisions for the responsibilities of older persons, as well as the protection of rights to property and inheritance, are welcome. This allows for either generational dialogue and solidarity within communities and aiding in the passing of traditions and heritage. The Department of Social Development recognizes that older persons are a valuable resource who are repositories of tradition, of culture, knowledge and skills, and these attributes are essential in maintaining intergenerational links. There has also been serious violations with regard to property and the inheritance, as most elderly persons are at the mercy of their families when it comes to their own properties or rightful inheritance. Older persons who are not able to read or understand the contents of documents have been coerced into signing, and this has led to some losing their homes or possessions. Sections 8 and 9 on service providers and guiding principles. We welcome the provision for residential and support facilities for older persons in terms of who may be registered to provide such services. The SDMENI incident dubbed the greatest cause of human rights violations cannot be repeated, where we saw psychiatric and other state patients relocated to cheaper care, unlicensed and grossly under-resourced centers. There is need, as this provision provides, to notify older persons affected by any decision and to provide similar services should they require such services. This adds a layer of accountability in dealing with services for all stakeholders. On sections 10 to 15, which is community-based care and support services, we believe regular monitoring and evaluation provides an opportunity to identify innovative approaches and make adjustments to enhance the effectiveness and efficiency of services aimed at improving the well-being and rights of older persons. Organizations need to constantly adapt and respond to the evolving needs of older persons and ensure that services remain relevant and of high quality under the supervision of the department. On sections 16 to 23 relating to the residential facilities, the enhancement and review to update existing law and provisions of social workers, managers, police officers, procedures and procedures provided therewith to deal with abusers of older persons ensures that there is a comprehensive protection for older persons. Noted also are the specific definitions addressing elder abuse of many forms, including neglect and exploitation. We, however, submit that the bill needed to provide for strengthened penalties for non-compliance and also dealing with offenders. Reporting mechanisms for older persons to report abuse, such as helplines, hotlines, or even online reporting platforms, should be made available if identifying and responding to elder abuse is of paramount importance. This is the end of our submission, and I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. I think, honorable members, the best way to deal with this is to allow also the other presentation, and then we note the questions and then we can deliver it after the second one. There are, in total, there are four. So if we can make the request to two. Now the second presentation can be allowed.
Thank you, Chair. The second presentation is from Professor Malepe. I will flag it from my side, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Wendy. Let's allow Professor Malepe to present, then honorable members will ask questions.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to honorable members. I just want to check that you can all hear me. Good morning to the honourable members, the other presenters, the other stakeholders that are present today, and the other attendees. It is a great honour to be here today. I really appreciate the invitation. I am Kitty Malaba. I am an associate professor at the University of the Western Cape, and where I have been teaching, amongst others, social security law. I'm in the Department of Mercantile and Labor Law, and I am also a research associate in the Center for the Transformative Regulation of Work, Centro, at the University of the Western Cape. I Just a second, would it be in order, Chair, if I switch my camera off while I present? Then I can focus on the slides and not...
Professor, you are allowed, so that...
Thank you. And then I just want to get my presentation on my slides. Sorry, I seem to have difficulties opening that now. So I might have to read my presentation off my phone. Just give me a second, please. My apologies for the delay. Thank you very much for your patience. So I've been researching the Older Persons Act since 2006, where most of my research has been doctrinal and social legal and focusing on the rights of older persons. So I'm here today to share my thoughts about the text of the Older Persons Amendment Law. So the starting point has to be that there is much to commend in the Older Persons Amendment Bill, and a massive task has been done in creating these amendments. The previous speaker mentioned many of the amendments that really contribute to the goals of the Older Persons Act. And I think one of the most important is the definition of older person that now corresponds with that of the Social Assistance Act. So we no longer have the strange position where older men between the ages of 60 and 64 can qualify for a social assistance grant, but not for the protection afforded in this act. So this amendment addresses that problem. I have noted the program for the day, and I am definitely cognizant of the fact that today I'm joined by people and organizations and stakeholders who are doing stellar work for older persons, and that I am the odd one out because I do research on older persons law. So I have to therefore limit my presentation to what may come across as dry technical analysis of the bill. But however, the existence of the Older Persons Act, and when it is amended even more so, is based on the constitutional rights of older persons. These rights that have to be realized by legislation such as this and all organs of state and private actors for whom the bill creates duties. But this bill ultimately will have to be, when it amends the Act, will have to be interpreted by various parties. And at some stage, if things go very wrong, by a court of law. Particularly when it comes to the remedies available for older persons whose rights have been infringed. And that is what I can bring to the conversation, the interpretation of the text of the amendment and where it could possibly go wrong. So my object today is therefore to highlight the provisions that may have unintended consequences or which may present a court of law with difficulties when it comes to interpretation. And I'm going to limit myself to the text of the bill itself, what I regard to be missed opportunities for gaps in the bill, and a couple of minor errors. You can go to the next slide. Thank you. So the first concern I have is with the lack of clarity on the caregiver concept. The new definition of caregiver that has been introduced by the bill limits who can be regarded as a caregiver. The current Older Persons Act has a deliberately broad definition of caregiver, anyone who provides care to an older person. And there is no explanation offered in the memorandum for why the definition is now limited to qualified persons, those accredited with NQF training qualifications, who are providing care and support in the services listed. What happens to unqualified caregivers? But the more restricted definition leads to interpretive difficulties in the context of Section 14, Subsection 1 of the Older Persons Act. If all caregivers are already required to have the requisite training qualifications, does the requirement in Section 14 that any person who provides home-based care and failed care must ensure that caregivers receive the prescribed training, mustn't that rather refer to further training if the definition states that all caregivers already have to have qualifications and training? So that is something that needs to be considered. Definitely a minor point, reference is made to a caregiver, and in this instance spelt with a hyphen, so care hyphen giver, in the context of the provisions in of the bill aimed at protecting older persons. So chapters five of the Act. Are these intended to be two different concepts? Caregiver spelled with as one word in one part of the Act, and caregiver with a hyphen meaning something different in a different part of the Act. So my recommendations are clarification on why the definition of caregiver has been limited to caregivers with accredited qualifications only. In essence, the question is, why is this happening in the definition and not in a substantive provision? I would also suggest including reference to further training if the definition remains as it currently is. If it survives like this, then references to training and further qualification would have to be referred to as that, further training. And if caregiver and caregiver with a hyphen are truly intended to be interpreted differently, which I'm not certain was the intention, then a definition of caregiver should also be included. You can go to the next slide, thank you. Regarding the amended Section 3, Subsection 2 of the Older Persons Act, this was definitely a necessary amendment because never have the competing social and economic needs referred to in Section 3, Subsection 2 been more evident than in the context of post-pandemic South Africa. Although the Older Persons Act and now the bill still makes no direct reference to Section 27 of the Constitution and the rights it creates for older persons, Section 3, Subsection 2 does employ the language of Section 27 of the Constitution, requiring reasonable measures within available resources. So that resources are limited and that difficult choices have to be made is evident. But what is not clear from the bill, and also obviously not from the Older Persons Act itself, is how does this, would this prioritization be evaluated, measured? The bill now also requires relevant stakeholders in addition to the relevant organs of state to realize the objectives of the Older Persons Act. And the inclusion of stakeholders here is to be welcomed. But the question remains, what comes first? Is the approach going to be determining which of the competing needs would be prioritized? And if older persons are not the top priority, does that then mean services and care to older persons would be relegated to the maximum of what else is left? Or does it mean what one would expect in an act dealing with realizing the rights of older persons, that measures aimed at the provision of care and support to older persons will be prioritized while keeping other competing needs in mind? The recommendation is that clarity on how the extent to which stakeholders are using the maximum of their available resources in the promotion of the interest of older persons, how that would be measured. Clarification on that would be helpful. My apologies. Two smaller issues. Firstly, the heading of Section 7, capital A. Clause 6 of the bill introduces a new 7, capital A to the Older Persons Act. And the text of that section truly makes the contribution that this amendment bill wishes to do. However, the heading, responsibilities of older persons, does not correspond to the text of the section. The text of the section aims to ensure that older persons are not prevented from fulfilling their crucial role in society. So therefore, the heading seems to be inaccurate. It doesn't match the text. In any case, creating responsibilities in terms of the Older Persons Act that cannot be enforced is unnecessary and, in the context of older persons, very likely unlawful and unconstitutional. But this can be easily remedied. So the suggestion is to just rephrase the heading along the lines of recognition of older persons' role instead of having a heading that seems to impose responsibilities on older persons. The next issue is that Clause 15 of the bill introduces a new Section 25, capital B, to the Act. This section extends the protection of older persons against abuse and neglect to older persons with disabilities and chronic illnesses and should be welcomed. It is definitely a truly necessary contribution and addition to this legislation. It introduces providing affected older persons with family care or special care as and when appropriate. But unfortunately, no definitions are provided for family care and special care. And therefore, there may be difficulties in distinguishing family caregivers and special caregivers in this context from caregivers in general in terms of the legislation. So the recommendation is just clarify in a definition what family care and special care is. You may go to the next slide, please. The definition of person and the requirement of juristic personality to provide certain services is an issue that I've been thinking about a lot, and I just want to point out some issues to honourable members. The definition of person in this amendment bill goes from a very open-ended definition to, in some context, very restricted definition. And no justification is offered in the memorandum to the bill for this significant change in the definition of person in the bill. And the notion of juristic personality as a requirement that is introduced by clauses 8 and 12 of the bill. So those measures, the definition, clause 8 and clause 12 of the bill, together would allow only juristic persons or trusts to be registered and consequently operate legally as community-based care and support providers and residential facilities in terms of the Older Persons Act. One of the principal aims with this amendment bill is to bring about clarity, but this is an area where it may be doing the opposite, because the first question is, which juristic person? There is no definition of juristic person. Would this include common law juristic persons? Or is the intention to limit persons to statutory and incorporated juristic persons only? The next issue is the reason for that preference is not clear. Undoubtedly, there are advantages to having just juristic persons and trusts providing the services. And the important advantages, they include increased governance and regulation, increased expertise and resources, increased stability and standardization, which is one of the aims of this bill. But one of the main advantages of juristic personality, and this is an advantage for the operators and the persons providing the services, is that juristic personality of an organization brings about protection against personal liability for individuals. And that may, under certain circumstances, be a downside. The other downsides are in striving to meet the governance, additional governance requirements that are provided for when juristic persons have to provide services, the personal touch may be lost. A lot of work goes into complying with all the governance obligations. It may mean a potential loss of connection with the community, specifically in the case of larger juristic persons, and higher costs for smaller operators. So the question is, have the advantage and disadvantages been investigated? It obviously remains a decision for this committee and for the legislature at large, but the question is, has this been considered? Because the text of the Older Persons Act is interrelated, so having a definition of person that does not apply in many sections does not promote clarity. Let's look, for instance, at Section 31(2) of the Older Persons Act. It provides that the person who has been convicted of the abuse of an older person and whose name appears on the register of abuse may not operate a residential facility or provide any community-based care and support services. Now, in most cases, abuse is done by an individual, a natural person. That's the person whose name would be appearing on the register of abuse. But that won't be the operator of the facility, because in terms of the definition and the newly introduced clauses, only a juristic person can operate these services, can operate a residential facility and provide the services. So my recommendations are reconsider that restriction. But if only juristic persons and trusts can register and legally operate residential facilities and community-based care and support services, then we would need a definition for juristic person. Okay. A definition of that would be required. Then also other consequences that have to be kept in mind is that the Older Persons Act creates criminal offences. It's only in exceptional cases that juristic persons are prosecuted for criminal offences. Even in the instance where a juristic person is found guilty of a criminal offence in terms of legislation such as this, the penalties that are provided for in Section 33 of the Older Persons Act would not be applicable. You cannot send a company or an organization to jail. So imprisonment as an option would completely disappear, and therefore in that context, the Act would have to be amended. Next slide, please. Very quickly, I just want to highlight two gaps in the bill. The one is a missed opportunity. The one is a small amendment that is required. It is noticeable, as I said before, that there is no reference to Section 27 of the South African Constitution, which guarantees everyone the right to have access to social security. The state is required to take reasonable legislative measures within its available resources to progressively realize this right. And social security rights include the right to have access to social services. The Older Persons Act, the current one, makes detailed provision for the regulation of existing services. It even protects older persons against discrimination when they apply for or are being provided these services. But nothing is mentioned about progressive steps to provide more services to older persons. And I fear that the limitations to the definitions that I mentioned earlier may do the opposite of progressive realization. It may be limiting access. Yes, it would be standardizing, and it would be clarifying in some areas, but it won't necessarily mean more services to older persons. Then the other small thing is the Older Persons Act refers to an old age grant in Section 25, subsection 5A. A gap in this bill is that the opportunity was not used to amend that and to refer to an older person's grant as the Social Assistance Act does. So all that is required is just an amendment of Section 25, subsection 5A, to refer to an older person's grant. Next slide, please. There are just a few typos and inconsistencies that could easily be addressed. Assisted living facility is defined as three words, assisted living facility, but the rest of the word refers to them as assisted living with a hyphen facilities. So there just needs to be consistency throughout. Just to recap on the recommendations, clarification on the caregiver concept, clarity on resource allocation and how that would be measured, consider rephrasing the heading of Section 7, capital A, reconsider the definition of person, but if not, amend the sections that definition would create interpretive difficulties with. A definition for family care and special care, and address the lack of reference to Section 27 of the Bill of Rights. But that is all from me. it is obviously up to Honourable Chair if there are questions and comments now, but I'll gladly address any questions or comments. And the last slide, please, that has my detail, which the committee is welcome to share if anybody has any questions. That's all from me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Malibe. Honorable members, that's how far we were able to get the two presentations. I don't know whether the minister has joined, but I've heard that she is with us. I would like to acknowledge her presence, knowing that it's Wednesday today, it's cabinet meeting, this and that. Definitely they are also needed, even in the lockup. Welcome you, Minister.
Chair, Patterson?
Yes.
It's Linda. Yes. Also see the Deputy Ministers. She's also in as well, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lindy. It's not easy for me to quickly pick up that. You are also welcome, Deputy Minister. We know that your busy schedule is just behind you, especially now after this proclamation of the voting date. But we really appreciate your presence. We know that this is at your passion. So you said to yourself, you must also attend and be an ear to hear what is it that the presenters are saying. You are welcome. Thank you very much for your presence. Can we then proceed, Lindy, in terms of giving over to the honorable members to have their deliberations and input and whatever. It's a matter of questions, that questions of clarity, if there is any, and also so that we can move to other presentations. Can I see the hands?
Member Masango, that's only hand.
Okay, Member Masango. But what amuses me is when the professor is saying the caregiver is anyone who is looking after an older person, whether on how the bill describes her or him, but in particular, the way she thinks and the way she knows, it's whoever that looks after an elder person. I laughed and I liked that one. Thank you very much. It was just a comment. Honorable Bridget Masango.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone, and thank you to the presenters that have given presentations this morning. My question, I just would like to ask quickly to our secretary if the submissions, the written submissions, were shared among the organizations that submitted, like if Ilitha Labantu's submission was shared with the prof and so on and so forth, and COSATU and all those that made submissions, or do we just have a sort of a situation where each person submitted and this is why we are getting the presentations today, just so that I can understand and maybe adjust the way I will be asking the questions, please, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Masango. And then I don't see any other hands.
I'm just asking if Lindy can tell us.
I know. Okay, I know. I wanted also to give others if there are other questions so that we combine all the questions and allow them to be answered. Okay, but because I don't see any other, can we then?
Chairperson?
Yes?
Good morning, Chairperson. How are you?
I'm surviving a point, and how are you?
I'm fine, Chairperson. I just want to apologize for attending late. I just had another meeting while I was this morning early. So I just want to apologize. I missed out now, but I will listen to what is going on. But I just wanted to apologize for joining this meeting late, Chairperson. Thank you.
You have been apologized. Thank you very much, Polly. Okay, let's give over to Lindiwe to just answer whether presentations have been shared amongst the presenters or not. Lindiwe? Lindiwe?
Yes, sure. The next slide.
No, the question is still stands. The question still stands of asking whether the presentation that are being presented right now, have they been shared amongst the presenters?
Amongst?
Yes.
No, Chair.
No.
It's shared amongst members of Parliament. I didn't share the presentation.
That was my also understanding. I thought, I don't want to answer for yourself, but I
thought... No, it's not like that. It's considered... Is that correct to do
it's
that?
It's their first time to hear one another. That's why we are patient for them, even if something has been raised by other presenters and by other presenter, and the other one is also maybe repeating it. We are patient on that because we understand that it was not shared among themselves. So, thank you. Honorable Masango, do you have a follow-up or can we proceed? Because we still have to have a Yoli so that she comes up with all other presenters, I mean, with all other submissions.
Okay. I just wanted to, because the issue of definitions, for example, there are a lot of questions that come from, for example, the RAN Association on the issue of definitions, and they go into a lot of detail to deal with definitions. But I would like to ask from Prof. Malherbe about the situation where she says the caregiver definition, she has concerns with it. Are we, is the concern throughout the name caregiver, or is it with care? Is it the way that maybe is implied in the care part of it, or the entire caregiver situation? Because I also appreciate the fact that she says everybody who, you know, who cares for an older person is a caregiver. And also the other question that I would like to ask from Prof is that the definitions that she has concerns about, are they too broad ranging or they too narrow to allow for adequate application in practice? And the third and last question to Prof is, how can a balance be struck to lessen the advantages or that she outlines where she talks about advantages and disadvantages when talking about the person and juristic persons and trusts? I just felt that the Prof had some, sort of solutions to that situation where we have both advantages and disadvantages. And when it comes to Ilitha Bantu, I have one question. They are talking about the deficiencies that this bill is going to be, dealing with, or that it this bill is going to be ensuring that those deficiencies are overcome by the implementation of the bill. I would like to know if they have any experience on the ground of those deficiencies because of the limitations that are in the Act at the moment, and also the regular monitoring and evaluation. Are they saying that it is happening, but it is not regular enough for it to strengthen the implementation or the outcomes of the implementation of the bill at the moment? Those are the questions I have, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Masang. I think the Prof is able to answer all what you have asked. Can we give over to Prof?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the questions, Honourable Member Masangu. As I said, the definition of caregiver, as it stands in the Act, is broad. It is any person who provides care, etc., to older persons. The amendment to the definition will restrict caregiver to someone who has been accredited with a national qualification framework training qualification appropriate for the care of older persons. That is a good thing. But having that requirement in the definition narrows the scope of the definition. It takes away from what in the definition previously referred to any person who provided care to an older person. Now to only a qualified person, and that leads to interpretive difficulties for the rest of the text of the Act, specifically where mention is made of, for example, the residence committee at a residential facility as the duty to ensure that caregivers employed there can get the appropriate training. But if they already have to have the training qualifications to be a caregiver, in terms of the definition, then surely those provisions should refer to further training and not to training. So my concern is that the definition has been narrowed. The scope of application has been narrowed by putting what is actually a substantive issue, the extent to which caregivers are trained, by including training as part of the definition. What we see is a substantive provision narrowing the application of the Act. And that is what I find problematic. I would always advise to have definitions as open-ended as possible, and then to refine or introduce substantive measures that provide what is aimed to be achieved. So have a provision that says by a certain time all operators have to ensure that caregivers have the required NCF training. But including it in the definition leads to problems when one interprets the rest of the Act. So to answer your question, I find that the definition is too narrow. As to the issue of juristic personality, so juristic persons and trusts operating residential facilities and providing community-based care services, I'm not quite sure, but I think many of the organizations that are providing care currently have some form of juristic personality. So I do understand why the provision was put there, but I don't think by adding in the definition again that a person is a juristic person or a trust in certain contexts leads to clarity. It is, of course, up to this committee and the legislature to debate and decide whether it would serve the interests of older persons better if the services are provided by a juristic person or a trust. But as was mentioned by the other, was mentioned earlier, sometimes when a natural person, an individual provides the services, it could lead to worse services. So how to balance the two? I think many of the concerns I have can be removed if the reference to juristic person or trust is removed from the definition and clauses 8 and 12 remain the way they are. Introducing the requirement that only juristic persons and trusts can operate facilities and provide services. I think each one, to actually answer your question, Honourable Member, each of the advantages of juristic persons offering these services can be turned around into a disadvantage. But the increased governance that comes with juristic personality seems to be what was aimed for in this amendment. And that is a definite advantage. There are external governance requirements. Companies have certain governance requirements and directives, and people are liable if the governance requirements are not met. But then my concern is, same goes for non-profit organizations. There are external governance regulations. It will just be very difficult for small operators to meet those. But if the harm that the amendments wanted to prevent is fly-by-night operators, it does make sense that juristic personality is mentioned, but I just want to caution and point out that Steinhoff, it is possible for people to be shielded against liability because they are operating within a juristic person. And much of the act and this law has to do with individual persons being held accountable, which would not be possible if the operator is a juristic person. I hope I answered your question. Please tell me if I have to clarify further. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Professor, for the response. I think you have clarified what you mean when you say these things. Thank you. Lindy, who is the next one? Because I sure. Don't see any ahead.
The next one is from
Professor. Is police? Is your hand up? One of the police?
Yes, thank you, Professor.
I thought you
thank
said
you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just need to ask. No, I read through the stuff. Yeah, I didn't listen to the thing, I was late. But I read through the stuff. I just need to find out from the prof. if you have a family member, say your mother or your father, and family members looking after that person, because the emphasis is also that the person must be trained to look after these older persons, no? Does it mean if you look after your mother and father and they are sickly and they are old, does it mean that you need to have a special training to look after these older persons? I just need to find out that, because I couldn't understand it, that they say that you, the person must be trained to look after older person. Is that only applicable for institutions, or is it also for home base? I just wanted to find out that, Chairperson.
Thanks, colleague. Over to you, Prof.
Thank you, Chair. As the Act stood initially, family members taking care of older persons in the family home was not included. And the definition of caregiver now clearly, it still refers to any person who provides care and support services, whether at community-based care facility, residential facility, or similar facility. So it does not seem to refer to pure family care at home. That, of course, could be clarified. It's very helpful in the context of reference in the later part of the bill, where the protection of older persons, the provisions regarding the protection of older persons, it is mentioned that family care or special care should be an option. And I did in my presentation point out that it is a gap that there is no definition for family care. I think that would assist and also address your question, Honourable Member. I trust it answers your question.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you very much for responding to these questions. Let's go to Kosatu.
Chair, sorry, Chair, very sorry for interruption. It just been brought to my attention that a member, Masango, also posed two questions to Ilitha Labantu, and they are not responded to. Thank you very much.
Okay, so the Ilitha Labantu would like to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Masango, for the questions that you posed. I don't know if I will be able to actually respect them comprehensively, but I'll just speak perhaps from some of the experiences we have on the ground regarding when the elderly persons have to receive services, be it either healthcare, be it reporting of issues of violence. So those are some of the areas where we find challenges. And I remember also, Prof also mentioning that having to sanction a juristic person would be very difficult because you cannot send them to jail. So that is why we were actually saying that some of the sanctions that should actually be looked at, it needs to be really looked at, because it's very difficult, because there are sometimes situations where we have these fly-by-night institutions that are taking care of these elderly persons, and when the abuse happens, then it's often very, very difficult to access justice for these people, because they cannot be sanctioned in a way that to actually bring proper justice for the elderly persons. I don't know if that is enough or maybe you want more clarity, Honorable Masango.
Thank you very much, Ilitha Labantu. That's your opinion. Then Masango, I think Honorable Masango has taken note of it.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. But I had another question about the M&E, the regular M&E that Ilitha Labantu referred to. Please. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay. Little Abandu? Can you repeat the question again?
She's asking about the MNE, that is monitoring and evaluation.
All right. I seem not to be... can I get back to you in a short while, maybe after the other presentations, if that is permissible, Jay?
Okay, no problem. Then let's give over for now to Kosate.
Chairperson.
Thank you.
I just want to get clarity on some, where is this Little Abantu based?
We are based in Guguletu Township in Cape Town.
Okay.
Thank you. Over to you, Kosatu. The platform is yours.
Good morning, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the opportunity for Kosatu to do the presentation. I know that our political leadership is also here, so comrades and colleagues, good morning to everyone and all protocol observed. Can we move on to the first slide, please? Chair, we'd like at the outset to say that we support the bill in its entirety. We think this is a progressive bill. It certainly is a fitting way to get to the end of the sixth parliament, because I think it does reflect on the importance of our regard as a society for those sections of the community who are most vulnerable and who we must put provisions in place for. Next, please. We think that this intervention is long overdue, as many of our colleagues had outlined. We think that the approach and the care of elderly people that has been evolving at times, and that the legislative framework has not always kept pace with this evolution. Many elderly people have been subjected to horrific levels of abuse, including from their own family members and caregivers who have been entrusted to their care. Many of the colleagues who reflected on this had already pointed out that many instances of abuse that has become public knowledge in our society has great concerns for all of us. The areas of support that we'd like to identify is the question of the right to comfort. The bill correctly acknowledges the right of the elderly to live in comfort and not simply to have the bare essentials. Needed to stay alive. People have worked hard throughout their lives, and part of ensuring their retirement is one of dignity is to ensure that all of their rights as defined by the Constitution is recognized. Next, please. The areas of support for caregivers and the facilities. The clause regulating the roles, responsibilities, and registration of caregivers' facilities are essential to ensure only those duly competent are allowed to provide care, and there is a standard by which they can be held accountable. The provisions requiring the monitoring and evaluation of community-based care are important in ensuring that they meet the required standards and that they are held accountable at all times to ensure that senior citizens are taken care of. COSATU supports the powers provided to the state to register, suspend, and close any facilities that fail to comply with their obligations under the Act at any time. This is a critical provision and must be enforced by the state in both the way it monitors and evaluates, but also its intervention in many of these areas. Next, please. The stakeholders, the clause providing a role for stakeholders is important, as the state's resources to provide care will always be limited. And we want to help to ensure that society plays a role in caring for the elderly and reports abuses to the relevant authorities. So today also the submissions that you received from others reflects on this important principle that we have to ensure that we have the regard for those communities. Next, please. On respect of the premise, it's important that the provincial government plays their role as they have the greatest footprint in this regard, but all too often have neglected investment in a rapidly growing need as society and culture evolves. This clearly is an important area that we need to reflect on in more detail, and we would ask that as the committee's ongoing engagement on this, that regard is given thereto. Next, please. This is a key, the inheritance abuse. This is a key intervention as many elderly are subject to serious abuse by family members, estate agents and others who seek to exploit the vulnerabilities and access their inheritances. Many elderly are not in a position to manage their finances and are very vulnerable to abuse in this regard. Whilst we know that the law seeks to institutionalize the protection against these kind of abuses, we also need to ensure that many other areas of our society where abuses originate, like, for example, in some instances of legal fraternity and the examples we've seen around the Road Accident Fund and how people have been ripped off, we see that manifestation in many other areas, and we think that there's an important need for us to provide the kind of support and provisions that ensures that people are protected. Then the education about care for non-communicable and chronic diseases. The provision requiring educational support and special care for the elderly with regard to the non-communicable and chronic diseases are key to protecting their health and well-being, as the elderly are at extreme high risk to infection and chronic diseases at the age that they find themselves. Next, please. Then, Chair, on the areas of abuse, the provisions requiring temporary safe care to be provided for the elderly who have been victims of abuse are critical to removing them from their dangerous environments, ensuring that they will be cared for in the interim and enabling them to testify against those who have abused them without fear of further victimization. We support that provision and would like to see it implemented speedily. Next, please. Finally, on abuse, COSATU supports the provision requiring reporting of abuses to person in authority and placing an obligation on those in authority to investigate such matters. The expanded definition of physical abuse is welcomed, and we hope that this expanded definition will ensure that we are able to clamp down on all areas of abuses, and whilst we should be aiming to avoid abuses where they are taking place, we want to ensure that we become aware of them and we act in that regard with the necessary expedition. Next point, please. On the conclusions, COSATU supports the Older Persons Amendment Bill wholeheartedly, Chair. We appreciate the opportunity to have to make the submission in our support for the bill. We believe that this is an important progressive legislation, and it is long overdue, especially given the examples that we've seen in our society, where unfortunately we've had circumstances where older people have been misused and often neglected. This bill plays a crucial role towards ensuring the nation's elderly can retire in safety, comfort, and with the appropriate care. It is important that Parliament expedites and ensures its passage before the 2024 elections. Any test for society is how they take care of its elderly and its most vulnerable. At the end of our sixth administration, we're glad to support the government who's put in place this legislation. Some of the points made by the other presenters we think have merits, and we'd look forward to looking at ways at how that can be accommodated to ensure that we're as precise and clear as possible in our efforts to defend our senior citizens. But, Comrade Chair, thank you for the opportunity, and we look forward to further engagements on this matter. We had at the outset, Chair, with your permission, indicated that given that it's the budget today and we've got to do a budget expectation statement to Power SM, we hope that we can remain with you to answer any questions, but we'd just like to signal that we are squeezed for time in respect of that interview. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, COSATU. We really appreciate your presentation, and we are happy that you are giving us even the time frame to implement this. Yeah, it's good for you to do it, but we are not sure on whether it's going to be possible, because it also has to fire the NCOP to be the head, still being right now. So there are processes to be followed, and also need to be signed by the president after the NCOP has also agreed. Thank you very much. It was very exciting and interesting on how you presented. Lindy, can we go to the second presentation, which will be the last one, so okay. That we can give our content advisor to put forward the other submissions.
Thank you very much, Chair. The next presenter is Mr. Johan Rademeier. I saw his name here. He's the one that is next to make his oral presentation.
Where is he? He coming, Lindy? Where is he coming from?
So Johan here, I assume it's him. I tried to call him earlier. Because he was scheduled for 11 o'clock, but I couldn't get hold of him.
Okay. It's better that he introduces himself. Thank you ever so much. Over to you. The platform is yours, Johan.
Chair, he seems not to be the one that is here in the platform, Chair. I've been trying to get hold of him, but in vain. Maybe we can just proceed with the questions of Mr. Kosatu, Kosatu's presentation while I'm trying to allocate him, to locate him. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, can we interact with the presentation from Kosatu? Honorable coordinators, is an old end for the general.
Thank you, Person. Chairperson, I would like to acknowledge the presentation that Kosatu made today. I also would like to greet Mr. Tony Ehrenreich, one of my own
where are you? Polnitz, you are breaking.
I don't know if you know the story, maybe.
No, we can't.
I'm really happy to see because I read through the presentation. Yeah. Chairperson, can you hear me?
We can't hear you. You were breaking.
Okay.
And
I want to say, can you hear me now? Because
yes.
I put my...
That's a fresh.
Yes. Okay. I would like to say thank you to Kosatu for the presentation that I made. I read through the slides. And I want to say it is nice to see that Kosatu is acknowledging the problems that we're having in our community, especially concerning the older persons and how the older persons are struggling in the communities. And I also would like to say to Mr. Tony Ehrenreich, who used to be one of my colleagues as a shop steward in Kosatu. It's nice to see him, and it's nice to see that Kosatu is taking an interest of what is happening in our community. I think it's a very nice slide that he put forward, and everything that we have addressed as the portfolio committee was also addressed by Kosatu. So I just want to say thank you, team. I think it is a very good thing that Kosatu is coming forward, and not just on workers' issues, but also issues that's happening in the community. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Polnitz. You wanted to be remembered. Now we remember you. Thank you very much. And other honorable members, input or questions? I don't see any other hand. Okay.
Chairperson?
Yeah.
Good morning. Johan Rademeier. I think you've been battling to get hold of me. Technology seems to have left us in the lurch this morning. Is it possible that I can continue?
Okay, thank you very much. You are welcome.
Thank you very much.
I understand that you were born before technology. So we accept that.
Chairperson,
continue.
You are so correct. Both my wife and myself are closer to 80 than 70, so yes. But thank you very much. My name is Johan Rademeyer. I live in the town of Wellington in the Western Cape. I did engage with you previously, and I would just like to point out a few things. I'm involved with our local elder age home, which is Silver Crane. It's a very well-run institution, and for the last few years, I've become more and more aware of the fact that institutions such as old age homes, et cetera, are more and more burdened by regulations and clamping down, et cetera, by government, et cetera. And we, in actual fact, supply a service that should be done by government. So, in effect, I'm very much of the opinion that government is abdicating their responsibility to a large extent. Now, as I said in my presentation as well to you, it really must not be seen as negative comment. I'm merely looking at hard facts. The one thing that is mentioned in the summary of the bill that was presented at your roadshow was the lack of coordination between the governments. And you said governments, and I actually asked, is that spheres of government to deliver services for older persons? Now, in my case, I have substantial municipal background, and in the environment of the older persons, like in our own case at the moment, we are in the throes of spending about 2 million rand just to upgrade our facility, which is a modern facility, to upgrade our facility to meet the standards of our fire department. Now, in my estimation, it is totally stupid to, in actual fact, spend 2 million rand on getting to SANS 10,400 requirements that the municipality is enforcing, when I should be spending that money on making older persons more comfortable and making the environment more enjoyable to them. I think that when we speak of these things, and once again, as I said in my presentation, this must not be seen as negative. And I always said, if we improve or have new legislation or an amendment, as in this case, one would think that it should be to improve the legislation firstly, and improve the environment that is being legislated. And but in our case, and as with many people, excuse me, in the organization that I present, which is the ACFIFIA, and for those that don't know, it's the Afrikaanse Christelike Vrouwenvereniging. My apologies. Was started by 5 ladies 120 years ago. And it's an amazing organization run by volunteers. Obviously, some of the people that work for us have paid jobs, but in essence, it is an organization run by volunteers. Now, in our case as such, it is the old age home that we run with approximately 130 inhabitants, which offers the full spectrum of services needed in the old age environment. We also run a service center for the aged, where they can come in on a daily basis. Those of them that still live in their own accommodation and are still moving about fairly freely. And then we have the social services side, where we engage 2 young ladies that do our social services in our area where we live. Now, first of all, if we look at our service center, I personally believe that the service centers should be playing a much larger role in servicing elder people in the different communities. Obviously, that can only be done if you have funds available. There are numerous people that we are aware of in our own town, Wellington, and further afield, that cannot move away from their homes on a daily basis because of their age and other incapabilities, etc., etc. But if one can, in actual fact, call on them once or twice a week, make sure that their kitchen is cleaned up, make sure that their bathroom is cleaned up, make sure that their washing is done, etc., etc., that will be a service that will be highly, quality-wise, it's going to be a very nice thing to do. But obviously, funding needs to be done. Now, in the case of the service centers, you will be aware that our grants that we received up till the beginning of last year for the number of persons registered at your facility, we in Wellington is most probably one of the larger service centers in the Western Cape, with a membership ranging between 240 and 260 on a regular basis. But our grants were cut in April last year to a maximum of 160 members. That, in actual fact, cut our budget by about 230,000 Rand last year, with the result that we were very, very limited in the services that we could render outside the service center towards the elder persons that are still staying in their own homes. We also have a community, a farming community just outside Wellington, elder people that have no services whatsoever. And we went the extra mile. We brought them into our environment with the services that we render in our town as such. But obviously, with our budget being cut by 230,000 Rand, we very soon ran out of money to accommodate an extra 50 persons, more or less 50 persons, that made no financial contribution towards our funding. That is one of the things that I think that the department should be considering very seriously. Obviously, we are today going to listen to a budget again, where the Minister of Finance will most probably tell us that our funding will be cut. In the case of the Western Cape at this moment, excluding salaries, I think it's about 640 million Rand that will be cut. And the 640 million Rand will most probably be cut into the budgets of education, health, and obviously social services, who are the biggest earners of grant funding. So we are faced once again with a cut in budget. Obviously today, everybody's holding their breath. We don't know yet what is going to happen, not in the Western Cape or the other provinces. But we need to get to a point where government should accept the fact that institutions like the RCFFF, for instance, and other organizations similar to us, are in actual fact stepping up to the plate and doing what government should be doing for the elder persons. And I'm so glad that Mr. Ehrenreich mentioned that previously in his presentation. And Mr. Ehrenreich, I always like to add a bit of humor. I personally have had a serious inkling towards politics, local and otherwise, for the last 55 years or longer. And I never thought I would get to the point where I will gladly admit that you and I have more in common than what I would have thought possible. So yes, thank you very much for your contribution. But coming back to the elder persons and the services that we are supposed to be rendering to them through our grant funding, etc., that is fast reaching the point where we will no longer be able to do what we think necessary, what we know what is necessary, just purely because of funding. In our case, the RCFFF as such, most of our revenue is generated from within our community or our different communities throughout the province. But you will all be painfully aware of the fact that of late. As I always say, we are all fishing in the same pool, but the pool is getting narrower and it's getting shallower. Just as a matter of interest, we do an annual golf day to raise funds, and I've been doing that or assisting in doing that for the last few years. And just last year, quite a few teams that entered on a regular basis came back to us and said they would love to support us, because every four balls that we play represents about 3,000 rand, which is a major contribution if you have 20 of those teams playing on a specific day. But they all have children in school, so this year or last year they had to make a choice. Do they support their school with their golf day, or do they support the elderly with their golf day? So obviously the elderly was moved to the back burner, and we lost out as far as that is concerned. So that just as a bit of background as to where we collect our money and how we, in actual fact, fund the services that we render to our elder persons. Having said that, the Bly laws, as I mentioned, by the municipalities, is something that we should, in actual fact, be talking about more and harder. I'm not going to name names, but there are a few elder persons institutions that I know just in my area where I live that will not be able to comply with the very, very stringent bylaws as far as the fire department is concerned. So once you get to the point where you are non-compliant, what will government do? Will government, in actual fact, say, sorry, we cannot give you any grant funding any further? Or what are we going to do? If so, what are we going to do with the 150 inhabitants? Are we going to put them on the pavement? Or how are we going to handle it? So somehow, somewhere in the very near future, government will have to sit down and talk to institutions that deliver this kind of service voluntarily. And coming from a community that is more and more under stress and strain as far as finances are concerned, we need to address this from the government side. When it comes to the division of revenue bill down to the provinces have their work cut out as well to fund whatever they need to fund. But that discussion must be had in the very near future, otherwise we're going to run into trouble. Am I going too fast? Can you hear me? Am you happy that I just carry on for another few minutes? As I said previously, and Mr. Ehrenreich also mentioned that people being removed from wherever they are and putting into a care facility. And in my written presentation, I actually mentioned it, that where I live, and where I move around in the Boland area, I have never come across anything where one can place an elderly person that has been taken out of an abusive environment, bad environment, call it what you want to call it. There are no such facilities available. So if the amendment bill is now making it possible to remove such a person without a court order, where are we going to go with them? That is the question. It's not a question of removing the person. It is a question of where do we place that person tonight when the sun sets? How do we bed them down? How do we feed them? Where do we feed them? And for that matter, we also have the same thing with children that are removed from abusive houses, abusive family, et cetera, et cetera. It is a daily, daily uphill battle to place those children in a care environment that specific day. So, I mean, it is so easy to change the law and to say, yes, we will be able to remove them without a court order. But the question is, where do we go with them once the court order or the removal has come into place? There is just no answer for that. And we just cannot amend a bill purely to say we want to do it or we're going to do it, but there's no solution built into the bill as to what we must do when we reach that point. I ended my presentation, my written presentation, saying one can discuss all these difficulties at length, but if no funding is made available, there is very little that can be done to implement the proposed amendment successfully. We, South Africa as such, cannot afford to spend more money on policing legal requirements as what the law will now be asking us to do. When there is no or actual little money available in the first place to comply with these extremely rigid legal requirements. And then I also ended, as I said at my introduction, that my comments really must not be seen as being negative. It is purely trying to comment on a set of facts that we are faced with, that we cannot circumvent. We must face them. But the options of how we face them is fast running out. And 90% of those options are funding related. So somehow we must get to the point where we can speak freely to government and say, please understand the situation of institutions like ours and take our hand, because we have been taking your hand for 120 years. And doing what government should be doing according to what the Constitution spells out. I think it's clause 25 in the Constitution to say that elder persons are entitled to a safe environment. Chairperson, thank you very much. I would like to commend you and the process that is being run to get this thing off the ground. Mr. Ehrenreich, I trust that you guys in the other institutions will press hard to get these things into place. And let's take hands and make it work, because we have vulnerable people that we are deeply concerned about and that we need to care for. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I remember you vivid well, because even in those public hearings, you were saying what you are saying today. You said quite loudly in terms of the budget that is not enough for the old age home. Yeah, but I'm not going to respond to that. I think it has been noted by the committee members and is being understood and understand even now what is happening. But the budget cut, you are right, it's there and it's going to be implemented right now today. So the little cake that we are having, we have to share it amongst ourselves. I understand your points, because it's not the first time that you are raising this. Thank you very much for your time, and also we really appreciate your presentation. We will give over to members if there are any inputs, questions or clarity.
Thank you. I would like to engage with anybody that would want to talk about how are we going to fund our facilities. I live in Wellington. If need be, I'm 45 minutes from city centre. I know exactly where Parliament is. I can walk in there within an hour and a half, and I'd even buy the coffee to get the talks going. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. I also wish that to happen to you. Honorable Polnit and followed by Honorable Lise.
I want to clarify to Johan. Okay. I want to say thank you for this opportunity. I heard that even there in boosters, the people on power. People were talking about the red tape. There was also a guy that spoke about the fire extinguishers and the place must be compliant and all that. I just need to know, introducing all the national government, because I just need to understand that thing, because everyone is complaining about that thing and the amount of money they're going to spend to be compliant for having the old age homes. Is it a municipality or is it coming from national government? Thank you, Chairperson.
Paulita, if I can answer you there, thank you very much. I think it's a very pertinent question, because municipalities work with national building regulations, the NBR, as we know it. The NBR, there are various things that feed into the national regulations. Amongst other things, it's a funny thing they call SANS, South Africa National, whatever, SANS 10,400, which is basically what we need to get institutions like old age homes to become fire compliant. We have, as I said, we are in the throes of spending 2 million rand over a period of 2 years, 3 years. We stretch it over three financial years. But each and every year we have to report to the department, because the department is actually the one that is seeking us to become compliant. Obviously, if one has a fire in an old age home, and God forbid that does happen, you have a major problem in the sense you have to evacuate people. Now, previously, we've got a complete fire plan with a lot of people involved in having specific jobs that they do when that alarm goes off. And then once the alarm goes off, lots of telephones start ringing from people that live within the 50 or 100 meter radius of the old age homes. Once again, volunteers that jump in to do whatever they need to do to evacuate a specific section of the old age home in an orderly fashion, get them outside, whatever, so that the fire department or whoever's on the premises at that stage can do their job. Yes, that is necessary, that people should become fire compliant. We all realize that. But the fact is that most of the old age homes, and I don't know of any new facility being built in the Boland area in the last 20 years. All facilities are non-compliant as we know them today. There are a huge number of them that will never be able to become compliant, because there is just no funding to do the job to become compliant. So on the one hand, we have the fire department that is on your back on a daily basis. They come and do the inspections. On the other hand, we have the department that says you must become compliant, because once again, the department does not want to be saddled with the burden of knowing that they did nothing and many people were injured in a fire. So everybody's trying to tick a box to become compliant. Yes. If you build a new building today, it is actually fairly cheap to become compliant, because it's new technology that you just build into the new building. But to make older buildings compliant is a major schlep in the first place. Like in our case, we have to lift certain sections of the roof to get into the roof to build firewalls right up to the roof sheeting, etc., etc. We have to remove certain sections of our floor, because you people will most probably know that in an old age home, one of the things that you put on the floor is a vinyl tile, because it is something that is hygienically easily cleaned. It can be kept hygienically cleaned fairly easily, but a vinyl floor tile is made out of petroleum products. So if you have a fire in a passage in an old age home, that thing goes up in flames like a tinderbox. And those are the things that when you do a new old age home, you don't go vinyl, you go ceramic tile or something to that effect that is also easily maintained, but it is absolutely fire resistant. So those are the things that old age homes are faced with. So on the one side, you get whacked by saying you must. On the other side, you must also spend the money that you don't have. to become compliant just to maintain your grant funding. So obviously, somewhere along the line, there's a link missing between funding and becoming compliant, and the people that actually write the legislation that most probably don't really understand the challenges that they have out there in old age homes that are run by volunteer organizations. I hope I answered your question, and I'd like to engage further if need be.
No, thank you very much, Johan. I know that maybe we have to speak to the minister, and minister give instructions to the MEC in the Western Cape to make a follow-up. I think we even said in that public hearing that the person that was present that time must also come closer to you and check what is it. The MEC in the provincial legislature must come closer to you and assist. I'm asking myself, why are these old age homes being taken as if they are compliant whilst they are not? So that is also another issue that needs to be followed up, and a report soon. We need to get it even before the sixth parliament finishes, because much as we are on the spiel or on these clauses that we were given here, but at least what you are raising is also critical and also needs to be taken note of it and to be considered and check on what is it that needs to be done. The Western Cape legislature and the responsible people are supposed to at least give us the information of what is that is taking place in all the old age homes that you are saying they are not compliant. Thanks ever so much for that. You have No, let's not make a debate, Joan.
Not a debate. I just purely want to say this is not a Western Cape problem. It's a national problem. So the minister has to engage nationally with all the MECs, and not only the MEC of social, in the social environment,
social
but also
development,
also the MECs that regulate municipalities, because they need to speak to one another as to how do we comply and how do we meet requirements that is being put upon us by the national government. So it's a national problem, not a Western Cape problem. We aren't fighting for the Western Cape. I'm fighting for every person in an old age home.
Are they also assisting where you are in Poland, as you have mentioned, Poland here?
No. As I say, it's a national problem. Thank you very much.
Let us not make a debate, Johan.
No, absolutely not.
The minister is present with us, and I am saying that we will talk to the minister to look at the matter, and she is the one who's going to see where is this non-compliance happening. Thank you very much, Johan.
Thank you very much.
Can we proceed to who else?
It's me. Yes.
Is that? Okay. Honorable Fandam, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and let me just start off by greeting all my colleagues, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, and then also thank you to everyone for taking their time to be with us this morning and their presentations. I think just on a lighter note, I wanted to say to Mr. Rademeyer that I am from Zebuland myself. I went to school in Paarl, and most of my family are from Wellington, and so my grandmother has also been a person who has been assisted by the RCFFF, so I understand their struggles and concerns. And Chairperson, as much as you have touched on it, but I think the issue of, and I know the Minister and the Deputy Minister is listening, but I think the issue of funding of NGOs are becoming a very critical matter that maybe if we're not dealing with it in this Parliament, it should be something that we focus on in the next Parliament. Because my concern is, I sometimes wonder, for example, now, these organizations provide vital services on behalf of the state, and the constitution and legislation says that it's our duty to protect the elderly. And it then becomes a question, it's also almost criminal when we then cut funding for NGOs to look after the elderly. So I think in the new parliament, possibly we should encourage DSD to start a process whereby they prioritize funding in particular to the elderly, to children and people with disabilities. Because I say that because this morning I was reading an article which stated that DSD and Gauteng has spent 114 million on a beauty academy. And that was funds that they took from the NGO funding and directed it towards a beauty academy. And whether that is, I know investigations are still taking place, but my point then is we should safeguard NGO funding for core areas. In other words, for the elderly, for people with disabilities and children. It shouldn't be that funds are just spent willy-nilly when we hear now that, you know, you need more money and not less to look after the concerns and the interests of the elderly. And I also just wanted to ask maybe to Mr. Rademeyer, because, you know, sometimes the budget that was cut by 230,000, was it funding that he received directly from DSD National or is it from the Western Cape? And whether he was given any reasons as to why his funding was cut. Because I think if you can account for how you're spending your money, you make a case that in fact you need more money and not less, then as much as I understand budget cuts, again, my point is that we should safeguard the services that we are supposed to render to the elderly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Lizette. Understanding all the hiccups and the handicaps that the NGOs are going through. Yeah, but we have taken note of that. Can we then check, is there any other member that would like to raise something? No one? Okay, can we give over to Yuli? Our content advisor in terms of other submissions that have been made.
Sure.
Over to you, Yuli.
Chairperson, it's Lindy, isn't it? The submissions were presented last week. Ne? The Yoli's role is an internal business where she will present the report of public hearings of all provinces. I think for now we just can conclude this process of public hearings and we proceed to the internal business because this the report of the national report of the provincial public hearings. This is the document, Yoli, that is going to present to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for cautioning me about the procedure that we have to follow. For let me take the opportunity of thanking all presenters that have presented to us. And I think we've taken note of all those things and we've jotted them down. We are also able to maybe look at them as members of the committee and take them forward wherever they belong. Thank you very much for them. Let's reduce them and deal with the internal matters. Thank you and bye. God bless. We all wish that things will be better in the next future, okay, in the next time.
Thank you, Chair. It's been an honor. Goodbye.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you. Bye. Rita Labandu, are you still here? Kosatu, our ally, are you still
thank
here?
You, Chair.
Thank you, Rita. Is anyone from the presenters, Lindy?
Chair, Mr. Rademeyer is still here. I don't know whether she wants to be an observer of the next stage, but is he still here?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I would just like to know, would you be able to circulate the contact details of all the persons that took part in the conversation this morning? I think it will be very, very helpful that we can, in actual fact, communicate with one another at a later stage and share our views and challenges.
Yes, that's good. Yeah, I think that is not a problem. It is going to do that. That's what also we thought that it has happened, but it's never late to mend. No. You can share ideas and just speak to one another in terms of trying to improve. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will be signing out. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Is everybody out, Lindy? Yoli?
I'm here, Chair.
Can you check from the gadget, is everyone out? And then
I'm doing so, Chair.
Who's civil? Is it civil. The civil that I do?
Private department, yes, Chair. I think the department
is in us.
Yeah. It's me.
Yeah.
Good morning. Thanks.
Okay. And Luyanda, it's here. Yeah. Who's Naomi?
Also from the department, Chair. She also attended two public hearings with Phil Civil.
Yes. All right. Okay, let's proceed. I see that also the DM is still here. Okay, can you proceed, Eileen?
Okay, sir. Good morning. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the members and to my colleagues, both from in the committee and from the department. Chair, I will keep my camera off today. It's just not, I tried to switch it on, but it's not showing me. So I'm just going to switch it off, Chairperson. Without wasting time, let me just go straight to the presentation, Chair. Okay. Chair, just to give a bit of a background on the public hearing, just very briefly because we don't have time, just to say that the committee conducted public hearings from the 2nd of June to 26th of November in all the 9 provinces, and this has been in accordance with the sections of the Constitution that Parliament must conduct or facilitate public involvement in legislative processes. Chair, maybe still on the background, I might just say that most of the inputs that were made during our public hearings were of service delivery nature, not specifically focusing on the actual provisions of the bill. Can you just go to Chair, I think that's you. Okay, thank you. But being having said that, they were equally important for the committee and the department to note because they speak to the actual implementation of the bill. And also to mention that throughout the public hearings, we had given you also several opportunities to address the issues that were raised or concerns that were raised by the public. So at least that opportunity was afforded to the public to have that explanation given. And those explanations are also captured in the report, the comprehensive report. Then, Chair, just to go quickly in terms of the attendance of the public hearings, in total, we had 6,880 attendees. And out of that, we had 606 people who made submissions. And if you can see from the slide here, the highest attendance was in the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape and Mpumalanga. However, if you look at the actual number of people who participated, you see that out of that 1,297 in Eastern Cape, only 79 made presentations. and then that was the trend throughout the provinces. And just to mention that when we're doing the Children's Amendment Bill, Honorable Abrams raised a clarity-seeking question on this, if does it matter when we have so much or many people attending and such a lesser number when it comes to the oral presentation. And the legal advisor at the time, Mr. Tengwane, he said the court that had made a judgment on public participation in parliament only emphasized that the parliament must conduct public hearings and there must be input from the public. But there's no specification how much of participation that should be. So, Chairperson, from what he explained, then there is no legal challenge with this trend in terms of the actual presentations that were made. And then in terms of gender, Chair, we had 402 females and 188 males, and KZN again had the highest number of presenters were females, that was followed by the Northwest and Northern Cape. However, if you look at Gauteng, Chair, it had the lowest number. However, the gap between the males and females is not as wide. Same as Limpopo and the Western Cape. In terms of the speakers' views on the bill, the majority of the speakers, they supported the bill, 455 of them, which is 75%. 150 did not indicate, and only two speakers rejected the bill. And then going straight to the comments that were made, with regard to the bill in general, not specifically to any particular clause, the bill was widely supported because it was felt that the amendment they showed older persons have been neglected for a long time, and that the focus has mainly been on the youth empowerment, and that has given the youth a misconceived power to abuse older persons. And the bill gives older persons the right to speak for themselves. It also uplifts and gives older persons dignity. And just one recommendation that was made, that there should be a widespread education across all levels of government on the bill once it has been passed. With regard to definitions, the most speakers supported the substitution of definition of older persons. As it also it was mentioned earlier, excuse me, in our oral presentation that we just received now, and also it was supported because it will do away with the discrimination against men regarding access to government benefits such as old age pension. Then thus the amendment ensures that there's equal rights for both men and women. And also it was emphasized, Jefferson, over a number of times that this inequality when it comes to the age of older persons had created or resulted in conflicts, especially between the spouses, and that eventually would lead to gender-based violence in families. And also it is commonly uncultured as it's commonly known that men should provide for their families. So the amendment, then it was felt that it would bring back male dignity in their families. Clause 3, the amendment of Section 3B of the bill was supported as it recognizes stakeholders in the provision of services for older persons. However, it was proposed that the bill should clearly outline the responsibilities of all the stakeholders in order to ensure adequate services for older persons. And also across the provinces, speakers raised concerns about the poor service delivery at healthcare facilities, that is their local clinics, that having to walk long distances to access these facilities. And also here in Western Cape, it came out they raised it very sharply that they now have to be transported from the farm areas to the towns using that truck. So the safety of older persons was raised, the concern about their safety. And that the service poor service delivery at police stations where other persons complained, which I'm going to also present on it later, that they don't receive the dignity and respect that they deserve, and that the police officials, they don't take their older persons when they bring the cases, they're not taken seriously. And also the banks where they have to stand for long hours with no shelter, and also at the municipalities. I think the presentation by Mr. Rada May also speaks to this, Chair, that they also stand in long queues with no shelter, chairs, or access to water and ablution facilities in these places. And healthcare facilities often have shortage of medication, and police officials do not investigate reported cases of elder abuse, and that municipal bills are not affordable to older persons. And also they emphasize the fact that elder care involves responsibilities of various government departments. However, some observe that some institutions seem to operate, you know, on their own or as entities, and reference was made to the Master's Office that even though it falls under Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, it seems as if it's operating as a separate entity. And this, Chair, was raised in context that the older person raised that when they lose their spouses in death, it is quite an expensive and legal process that they have to go through so that the assets of the deceased person can be transferred to the surviving spouse. And so they need to be assisted in that because it is quite a lengthy and an expensive process for them. Okay, and then the recommendation was that the bill should make it compulsory that all public and private facilities should have separate dedicated queues specifically dedicated for older persons. And just to say, Chair, that Obamusi will also address this issue as every time it was raised by the speakers, but I know that opportunity is coming again when the department will respond on the inputs made by the public. And then in terms of clause 4 and 5, the inclusion of clause 4 and 5 of the bill was also welcome, as it mandates all organs of state and officials to respect, promote the rights of older persons. And most speakers propose that the bill should explicitly include the roles of departments, such as health, human settlement, and local government, in bringing services to old age centers. Also, there should be inclusion of youth as ambassadors of older persons' rights. So this was also a highly recommended point, because older persons submitted that the most perpetrators of elder abuse is the youth, because they're sitting at home and not working. And so they need also, so there should be some form of awareness on the rights of older persons made to the youth. A concern was raised that only DSP visits older persons service centers to conduct monitoring and provide services. The Department of Health is not visible, hence there is a shortage of healthcare services at this center. There are some residents, speakers who raised concern regarding that large portion of their old age grant is taken by the where they stay in old age homes, and they only left maybe with like 200 rand from their grant, and this makes it difficult for them to buy any personal items that they may need, like snacks, toiletries, and extra that they may need as personal items. A recommendation was made that traditional leaders, counselors, and the youth should be provided with necessary skills and information in order to understand the health challenges faced by older persons, such as dementia and Alzheimer's, and also because older persons who suffer from these diseases are often accused of witchcraft. Clause 4, which mandates all organs stay. Okay, I think I've already covered this one, Chair. And then we go to clause 6, the insertion of 7A and 7B. The insertion of 7A and B was most welcome and supported, as it promotes mentoring and passing on of knowledge and experience to the younger persons by older persons. And that clause B will assist, 7B will assist families to resolve family challenges and conflict that arise when an older person is deceased and then there's a fight over the assets of an older person. It will also protect the rights of older person when it comes to their properties by ensuring that their properties are not transferred to their grandchildren without their knowledge. And when this has happened, it has resulted to an older persons losing their homes and becoming homeless. And there's a recommendation that government should employ retired educators to organize other older persons and facilitate workshops of older persons. And that the Department of Rural Development and Human Settlement, that prior to changing ownership, must first verify the information from the previous owner, especially if the house belongs to an older person. There should be a process to verify the legitimacy of the transfer of properties of older persons to their grandchildren or children. With regard to clause 7, a recommendation was made that Department of Health should train and educate communities, facilities. Oh, I've already spoken to this chairperson. And also the issues of other persons not affording the municipal bills. A recommendation was made that elderly people should be educated on the indigent policy. If you remember, chairperson, now and again you will explain that to the participants that there is an indigent policy. So then the recommendation then was made by some members of the public that there should be then education to older persons about this policy. And also there should be training programs where older people can be trained on how to use technologies such as ATM, smartphones and computers. And concerns were raised that older persons, they are often robbed or have their money stolen by families because they don't know how to use these devices. So they rely on their children or grandchildren to access their grant, which sometimes they don't get receive all of it from their family members. And also a recommendation was made that older persons should also be taught sign language and that older person must be taught writing skills, and in this context a request was made that the elder basic education and training EBET be reintroduced at the residential care facilities, that government should have proactive measures that will ensure that services to older persons are provided even when there are any pandemic or unforeseen natural disasters, and that the bill should also include financial education of older persons. Clause 8, this clause was also supported by the following concerns raised, that centers and clubs, they want to register and operate within the law, but the requirements are not user-friendly. Officials who are supposed to be assisting take long to respond, and when they do, they only identify shortcomings. There are NPOs that are operating from municipal-owned buildings who are struggling to obtain lease agreements from the municipality, which are required for the registration purposes. And then the majority of older persons complained that they were not able to register their old age centers because they don't meet the norms and standards. They operate in open spaces under trees. Some operate in dilapidated structures or mud houses. Sorry, the centers do not have ablution facilities, they don't have windows, doors, and they're not fenced, and they do not have access to water supply. And then a recommendation was made that private residential facility needs to be defined succinctly from personal private residence. Clause 8, I mean section 13.1A should have same penalties as clause 20 in terms of liable fine or imprisonment. The bill should allow any person who is suitably qualified to take care of other persons. I think this was also raised in line of what Professor raised in terms of a definition of a caregiver. The bill needs to provide definition of private residential facility to ensure that clause 13 does not include family members in their own private residence caring for older persons. So sometimes the views were contradicting themselves, but we are there to capture what the members of the public are saying, Chair. Okay. And then the other concern that was raised, that registration or revoking of the facility should only be done for those care centers endangering the lives of older persons. The bill should set standardized tools which relate to and distinguish services according to rural, informal, and urban areas, and that the bill should clearly stipulate requirements for temporary registration of community-based care and support services. Then the insertion of duration of suspension or deregistration of the care center should provide conditions which determine the suspension. Clause 9. This was also supported. However, there were some concerns that were raised. Some members of the public were in support of the bill, but some were in support, but they had some concerns that they needed to raise. So those who were in support, they said all trained caregivers for older persons must be taught standardized curricula through prescribed training, and that training of caregivers must be a priority. Some felt that there is no training of caregivers, especially in frail care. There's also no funding for frail care resources such as diapers and transport. Allocated funds are only for food. Elderly people should also be considered as caregivers. Some young people do not know how to take care of the older persons. And then others felt that approximately 80% of caregivers do not receive any training. This is despite the government having started providing training, of caregivers, but this was last done in 2018. That any person who provides home-based care must ensure that home-based carers must have proper training. And also in support of the amendment, some speakers sought clarity on where caregivers can obtain the prescribed training. They also wanted to know how will the caregivers be trained and what are the consequences if a caregiver is not trained. Who will they be accountable to for their services and how would their referral pathway be done? On clause 10, this was also supported, but the following inputs were made. Monitoring of the old person's community-based care centers will minimize maladministration. There is a need to strengthen monitoring of the NGOs for the older persons. And then monitoring of care centers should be older persons driven. Social workers monitoring at these centers should consider engaging with older persons who reside in those centers. Yeah. And then the recommendation was that there should be constant monitoring and evaluations of older persons or centers, sorry, I left it out there, through unannounced or announced visits by the designated officials to determine whether the well-being of the elderly people in community-based care centers and support services and home-based care centers are taken care of. With clause 12, these are the concerns were raised even though the clause was supported. The process of registration of residential care facilities are onerous. Service centers end up being operated in old buildings or community halls. A lot of service centers are operating from rented private properties and in makeshift structures. They do not have necessary facilities and gym equipment. Government was requested to assist these centers to relocate land by municipalities and provide funding to build permanent structures. If I can just elaborate on this one, Chair, for example, in provinces like the Eastern Cape, they raise the concerns that they don't have land to build their centers, even though they were registered as a center. So they operate in open spaces. So they were requesting for land, and some that they were allocated land, but they didn't have the resources now to build on that allocated land. Same with other provinces, Chair. Some will say they were registered, they have the registration numbers as a center, but they don't have land, or those that have land, then they don't have the means to build structures in the land that were allocated. Okay, there are many people who take care of the elderly people in their private homes. The bill should make provision for this kind of service. It is costly for NPOs to obtain certificates such as zoning, health and food acceptability. It was then requested that these NPOs should be partially exempted. Some elderly people who run the service centers, they raised a concern that they don't have title deeds, and they were requesting that they should be issued with title deeds. Clause 13, in support of the amendment, the speakers raised this. The closure of or deregistration should be for facilities endangering the lives of other persons. Some NGOs and or NPOs that are rendering service for other persons are run as a business and neglect other persons. I think this was raised when we were in Free State, I think, where the lady specifically mentioned an NGO that was closed and then it reopened in another place where there were cases of neglect and abuse of other persons. So her submission was that some are just run to make business, but not necessarily to take care of other persons. Okay, the recommendation was that insert individuals such as sole proprietorship and partnership in the re-registration, closing and revocation of registered residential and community-based care centers. Clause 18A should be included in the penalties in Section 33 as an offence, as it deals with instances where a facility is deregistered or closed. And then the bill should amend the proposed 30 days of deregistration of a residential or community-based care facility to 90 days. There should be monitoring and evaluation as well. There should be monitoring and evaluation as well as training conducted before the facility is deregistered. That the jurisdiction should be assisted, trained, and given an opportunity to make the facility compliant before it is deregistered. Clause 15, the inputs were made as such. Clause 15 of the bill was supported, especially the insertion of 48 hours of obtaining a court order instead of 24 hours, since there is a shortage of magistrates and a huge backlog of cases in the National Prosecuting Authority. Thus, 48 hours will afford the court reasonable time to issue court orders. Other persons with disabilities and chronic illness should be protected in community-based care centers and fair care members and family members. Oh, in fair care centers, sorry, not members, fair care centers, yeah. Then in the light of the budget cuts across government departments, there are inadequate bed space in old age homes. This is worrying because the bill, once passed into law, must be implemented. Then the question that was raised is that where would the resources come from? This now just speaks to the amendments that the removal of older persons to a temporary place of safety. So the question is, where would then resources come from to run those centers? And also, what measures would be put in place to ensure that the move is done in a safe and a protective manner? How would the expectation be managed regarding training and funding for better salaries? The department may not be able to remove an abused older person to a place of safety because of lack of resources and residential care facilities. And then a point was made that it is particularly difficult for older persons with disabilities to access government services such as clinics, and deaf people are not attended to when they visit government offices. And that for clause 15 to be implemented, there should be a provision of temporary safe care facilities in communities. It is difficult to place elderly people in old age homes that have subsidized beds. Houses for older persons should be remodeled to accommodate their disability. And then most elderly persons, especially those with disabilities and those who are frail, do not know their rights and services available for them. Most elderly people are bedridden and families do not know how to assist them. That abused old people that have been removed to the social clubs do not receive any legal protection from the police, as they view their abuse as domestic violence. Some elder people who had been removed feel abandoned and neglected at the place sense of safety because they are far from their homes. After a few months, then they go back to their homes. And then the recommendation, there should be sign language interpreters in all government sectors, at police stations, courts, churches, and other front desk offices. There should also be transport for older persons, the same as the vehicles designed to transport people with disabilities. That Section 25A should be amended to provide that the court may not grant an order unless it has obtained a report on circumstances of the older person concerned from a social worker or a healthcare provider. Okay, that houses for older persons that are yet to be built should have ramps and inside toilets and bathrooms. Then a proposal was made that there should be a substitution of Section 25A by the following: facilitate the removal of the older person consent to temporary safe care as provided for in Section 25A. The Act does not define substance referred to in Section 25, subsection 5E. It was proposed that a definition of substance abuse should be included in line with the Prevention of and Treatment of Substance Abuse Act. Clause 6, it was also supported by the following inputs were made. Police officers take longer to arrest suspects or perpetrators of abusing older persons. Furthermore, it was alleged that police officers do not take cases of older persons' abuse seriously, especially if a perpetrator is a member of a family. Police officers should be guardians of the rights of older persons and should take care of older persons seriously, to take the cases of older persons seriously. And then a concern was raised that there are no private rooms for older persons in police stations where they can open charges against their abusers. It was therefore recommended that a private room is needed when older persons open cases, especially sexual assault cases. That court clerks should receive training in order to understand the challenges faced by older persons. Some older persons are struggling with disorders such as dementia. And the case was made that in some instances, when the other persons now appear in court, there may be inconsistencies in their evidence because they are forgetful and they may not be as coherent and as accurate in their testimony. So there should be that awareness and training on the legal people in court. Another concern was that older persons do not want to report the abuse to the police. They report it to caregivers, but when caregivers try to intervene, older persons will report them to their families. So this causes problems of caregivers as families accuse them of interfering in older persons' family affairs. I think this has raised tempers in the context that the bill makes it a requirement that the cases of older persons, if you are aware of it, then you should report it. So some people, they raise this concern that when they do, then they are accused of interfering in the person's family. There was a submission from the Northwest Older Persons Forum that also included proposals that were not necessarily in the bill. Hence I've written it as a new proposal that is not in the bill. So they're proposing some amendments in Section 27, Subsection 5. And they want the word may to be substituted with must. Then insertion of a provision similar to Section 29, Subsection 2, with regard to Section 25, Subsection 5, inquiry after Section 27, Subsection 5, should read as follows. The magistrate or any other person designated by the magistrate for the purpose must appear at the inquiry and may call witnesses and cross-examine any other witness giving evidence at the inquiry. Okay, and then it further argues that although abuse of older person is a criminal offense in terms of Section 30, Subsection 1, the proceedings in Sections 27 to 29 are not criminal proceedings. They are inquiries into the alleged abuse of an older person. Therefore, the word alleged offender should be substituted with alleged abuser Once the alleged abuser has appeared in court, he or she is simply referred to as the respondent. Then the powers granted to the court in terms of Section 27, Subsection 6, Subsection D, should be included in Section 29, Subsection 10. I think the department will respond to this, Chair, when they've looked at this proposed amendments, especially that they are not in the bill. Then back to the clause of the bill, clause 17, this provision should, it has submitted that this provision should be akin to other provisions in other legislation wherein a prosecutor plays a role in the procedure of this nature. Then it has recommended that courts should be brought closer to communities so that they can be accessible to other persons. That Section 28.1 should replace if a social worker or a healthcare practitioner with if any person. It was proposed that Section 28D, once the affidavit is received by the prosecutor, he or she can then request a report from a social worker in terms of Section 28, Subsection 2. Then the bill should address the issue of legal representation of abused other persons in court. I think that is already covered in the bill, but it came out in the submission that they made. That it should also expedite the allocation of special courtrooms and specialized personnel to deal with abused older persons. That also, Chair, that's what the bill seeks to do. Then the new proposal on Section 29.10b, the provisions of Section 29.2 of the Principal Act empowers the magistrate to designate a public prosecutor or any person to appear at the inquiry. The magistrate cannot, by law, designate a prosecutor to perform prosecutorial functions. So the literal meaning of the word designate is understood to mean appoint or assign or ascribe. Then the question raised by the submission is that who is this any other person that the magistrate could designate to participate in the judicial process? Are there any guidelines on the suitability and competency of this any other person? The recommendation, it says there is no justification why the duration of an order in terms of Section 10B should be restricted to 10 years. And so the restriction should be removed. The powers granted in Section 26, 27, 6D should be included in Section 29.10, Subsection 10. Insertion of a provision similar to Section 29.2 with regard to Section 27.5 inquiry after Section 27.5 should read as follows. The magistrate or any other person designated by the magistrate for the purpose must appear at the inquiry and may call witnesses and cross-examine any other witnesses giving evidence at the inquiry. Clause 18, there was overwhelming support of this clause and the following inputs were made. The insertion of a court clerk or registrar to record the physical abuser of older persons by providing the details of the offender having been convicted was supported. That the keeping of the register of physical abuse will ensure that the protection of older persons will ensure the protection of older persons from perpetual offenders. There must be consequences for the perpetrators of other persons' abusers. It was proposed that life sentence should be issued for the perpetrators. The South African justice system should protect the older persons and speed up court processes. It was also raised that older persons, particularly the frame, are abused and neglected by their families. That in-home-based care services frail elderly people are abused by other older persons, that most older persons are alienated, and this is one of the reasons they are abused. And older persons are financially abused by their families demanding their old age grant. That there is a lack of clear definition of statutory abuse of older persons in the bill. When older persons are deprived of necessary services, such as the delay of payment by SASSA, there is no consequence management that matches this transgression. This was a statutory abuse, but there is no provision for such statutory transgression in the bill. And that other persons complain that they feel neglected by government because they have to travel long distances to access government services, that they are abused by their grandchildren who are unemployed and abuse drugs, that older persons, especially those who come from rural areas, feel neglected as they do not have access to any services and facilities, that there is a great need for old age homes in communities. The recommendation that we made is that punitive measures should be inserted in the bill for the physical abuse of the older persons, that definition of an older person as contemplated in Section 32 of the Act to add occurring within a domestic relationship and outside the domestic relationship. That psychological abuse in Section 30, Subsection 3, to read as follows. Emotional, verbal, and or psychological abuse means psychological abuse means a pattern of degrading, manipulating, threatening, offensive, intimidating conduct towards an older person that causes mental and physical harm to an older person. And that repeated exhibition of obsessive possessiveness or jealousy constitutes a serious invasion of the compliance, privacy, liberty, integrity, or security. The willful damaging or destruction of property in close proximity of a complainant to harm or threaten a household pet or other animals or other animal whose welfare affects a complainant's well-being. So these are the proposals, Chair, how the physical abuse can be, the definition of physical abuse can be extended as it is provided in the bill. The other one is to disclose or threaten to disclose a complainant's sexual orientation or other private information concerning a complainant to others without a complainant's consent, to threaten the complainant with death or injury of a person or damage of another person's property, or threatens to commit suicide or self-harm. And then under definition, recommendation of that, add definition of harassment in Section 30.3 to be in line with Domestic Violence Act of 1998 and its amendment. Okay, and also in terms of expanding the definition of abuse, it has proposed that the bill should insert this phrase, occurring within any relationship where there's an expectation of trust, restricts application of the definition. Okay, now the definition of spiritual abuse should read as follows. Spiritual abuse 1A means advocating hatred against the complainant because of their religious or spiritual beliefs that constitutes incitement to cause harm to the complainant, preventing the complainant from exercising their constitutional right to freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief, and opinion. Okay, so that was as far as the summary of the issues that were raised during the public hearings in terms of the bill. And then there were other issues that were raised that were of service delivery nature, but not really speaking to the bill. One being that of government pensioners. It came out in almost all the provinces that government pensioners should also receive old age grant as they are entitled to it as older persons. That the means test disempowers older persons when they reach pensionable age. It also causes conflicts, gender-based violence between husband and wife, as it disempowers the spouse who does not have any source of income, particularly husband. Then others propose that the means test should be removed from the old age grant and relief measures should be legislated for those who are affected. With regard to the social assistance program, a number of older persons, they raise the concern that they financially support their children and grandchildren with the old age grant because of high unemployment. And they were proposing that the value of the old age grant should be increased because of the rising cost of living. And that also raised the point that they get robbed were they standing in long queues at pay points or traveling from the pay points. And others were actually, chairperson, such as now omitted to include, I just remember, they were recommending that the SASA or department should reintroduce the payment at the community pay points, the payment of social grants, because some of them, they are not able to travel to town or it's risky, they get dropped while standing the queues at the banks, and others raising concerns that they are not able to use the technology like the ATM, like I said, or the smartphone. So they were actually recommending that the pay points should be reopened. Okay, and then others they raised that almost all the persons do not know about the granting aid, especially the frail and disabled older persons, that there should be educational campaigns organized to educate older persons about this grant. And linked to that, there should be a specified age for example, 70 years and older, in which older persons automatically qualify for this grant. Because at that age, most of them are not able to do some of the daily chores and self-care. With regard to the public participation platform for older persons, there is that they should be given a national platform where they can be addressed by the president, and that will show that the president also cares for them. And that government services such as clinics, the courts should be made accessible to rural areas through the mobile trucks, and chronic medication should be delivered to older persons, specifically the frail. That government should establish a public funeral scheme for older persons because they cannot afford to open private insurance policies with the limited old age grant. They also ask for a service desk for older persons, and that so that they can be represented in parliament through this desk, and it to be a similar provision as that that is in the premier's offices. Then they also wanted to have a representation in the committees. They also raised concerns that they were notified very late about the public hearings, and that resulted in them having limited time to share with their beneficiaries and obtain input from them, that is those who attend the service centers and clubs. This came very strongly in one district in Eastern Cape where they complained that there was no education or mobilization conducted before the hearings. And then the private service centers and other relevant organizations from submitting meaningful inputs and comments. In some provinces, copies of the bill were not translated into local languages. With regard to non-attendance of stakeholders, a concern was raised that the stakeholders who were consulted on the bill, as they appear in the copy of the bill at the back, should have also attended the public hearings. That it was important for them to attend the public hearings because they provide services to older persons, such as Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Health, Municipalities, and etc. That's the end of my presentation, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. I think we were all yes, but you reminded me of some other things that I have really forgotten about. Very, very important ones. Thank you ever so much. Well covered. any additions, omissions, honourable members? Anything that you remember that was raised? No hands? Silence means consent. And I hope that because Yoli has covered most of the things, other ones we have forgotten about them, but she reminded us of this. Then, what is the next step, Lindy?
Good day, Jefferson. This is the consolidated report of issues that emanated from the public hearings of the 9 provinces. I don't know whether the chairperson, we can just adopt this consolidated report as a reflection that all the reports from various provinces were adopted by this committee, or you want us to go province by province, and then if you are comfortable with this and you're of the view that it covers all the issues that raised during these public hearings, we might go to province by province, or we adopt this report as a true reflection of what transpired in the public hearings, provincial public hearings of the 9 provinces.
Thank you, Lindy, for that process. But there's no need for going province by province because you only tried to cover each and every province and to even quote what each province has said. So let me give once more again to members. Maybe there will be things that they are able to remember and are not covered. Honorable Mangani?
I'm not disputing. I'm saying Yoli covered everything, even although it's not coined the same, but their meaning is just the same, whatever, in all the provinces that I have attended. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matt Mejay. Honorable any other hand? I hope that it's closer to the time that the members have to travel to the venue and also maybe they are busy preparing. Maybe let's just finish this one and look at or adopting it if we correct, as Lindy has said that we are a quorum. No other hand. Can we then get a hand from the honourable members that is saying Yoli has covered a lot and it is a true reflection of all the provinces that we visited? Honourable Jay?
Yes, Chair. I'm proposing that we must adopt the report because to me it covers every province that we have gone through. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Menjani. And then can I get a second to this proposal that at least newly covered everything that we got from the visited provinces. Any second? Honorable Bilangul?
I second
Okay, thanks much. As your network is not clear, but I heard this thing that you're saying. Yes. Thank you, Honorable. The report has been adopted and also seconded. Honorable members, can we then go to the thank you ever so much, Yuli. Can we then go to the next item?
Chair, the next, which is the last item, is for the portfolio committee to adopt the report, the minutes of the 8th, of the 8th chair of November, also the 29th of November, and the last week, the 14th of February.
So, the ones of November are very stale, really, but we have to adopt them and then maybe concentrate on the one of February. Can I get hands that will say that, can we fly to them, Lindy? Okay, I can see them. The one of November.
Chairperson.
Lindy, fly to the... Honorable Mehdi, let's deal in.
Chairperson, we went through that minutes. The minutes of November is a true reflection of what has happened. I propose that we adopt it.
Thank you very much, Mehdi. As I'm saying that they are very safe. Lindy can't fly to them. Maybe let's go to the other set of minutes. Understanding that she's getting a problem in getting straight to them, and they are very, very safe. And then the meeting of is it not that the one that Comrade Magdalene has adopted?
Yes. There are two sets of minutes for November, so I need to indicate who supported, who moved for this minutes of the 8th and the seconder, as well as the 29th, the mover and the seconder chair. So now we're at the 8th. Mama Peterson proposed for adoption. We can need a second chair for the
second. This minute. Okay. Any second to this minutes of the eighth?
Second chair.
Comrade Bilangulu, second. Thank you very much, Honorable. The one of the November.
Yes. The 29th chair?
29th November.
Yes, chair. I'll just share them now. That's I've opened on PDF, but now it has disappeared. I don't know.
Honorable McTavin, the minutes of the 29th.
I approve that also, chair.
You have read them.
Yes, Chair, that's a true reflection.
Yes, Magdalene is adopting. And then the one of the 29th, please.
Yes, Chair, I've got a mover, member, Mama Peterson.
Yes.
Seconder, Chair.
And the seconder.
The members that are present are here in the attendance. Register chair is reflected. Can
Honorable Manganye?
Chairperson, it's Bridget. I would like to second the minutes, please.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Bridget. Is seconding the minutes of the 29th November. Then let's focus, like the one of February. and also give us the direction. That's okay. Yes.
Okay, Chair. Hey, when is PDF? Did you just? That's 1 second, Chair. Chair, the meeting of last week, we invited the Codan advisor briefed the committee on summaries of public comments on the older persons bill. Also, we adopted, Chair, the first term committee program for 2024. Chair, members that were present, our chairperson, Member Mvana. We had Member Pilangulu, Member Mhlongo, Member Manganyi, Member Stock, Member Peterson, and Member Masango, Member Aris Marae. Chair, we had our apologies from Member Sukers, Member Abraham, our standing apology from Member Abrahams and Member Fanamerve. Chair, we had your support staff. And Chair, you welcomed everyone. Also, Chair, these are the apologies from Member Fanamerve, who was unable to attend the meeting due to a meeting scheduled with Home Affairs. Chair, sorry, Chair. I think that was. Sorry, members, for that. I've opened my these with documents on the PDF, but now they don't appear. Okay. I hope. Yes. And then, Chair, we received apologies from the three members of the committee, Member Father Merve, Member Sukers, and our standing apology from Member Abrams, who's on maternity leave. And then, Chair, we also adopted the agenda, and the proposer was Member Masango, and the seconder was Member Pilangulu, and there were no minutes, Chair, scheduled for adoption and consideration. Chair, Yoli mentioned, gave a background that the committee advertised for public comments from 7 April to 19 May, and then only 7 submissions were received, and then 2 individuals as listed below. Chair, we had out of the 9 submissions were from Professor Kitty Rand and Rand Aid Association in Italabandu, National House of Traditional Leaders within Cape Government for Study Dear South Africa, and Member, your Mr. Johan Vandermeer, and also the South African Catholic Bishops Conference. And out of these 7 submission, only 4 members, who 4 organizations that indicated to an interest to make the oral submissions, and we've done that. Chair, also there was a first term program that was presented. Member Pilangulu proposed adoption, which was seconded by Member Masango. In a nutshell, it was just a short meeting with such information. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linji. Those are the minutes, honourable member. Can I get any mover for saying that this was a true reflection of the deliberation in the day?
Yes, Chair.
Comrade,
let me move for the adoption of the
thank you
of this minute as a true reflection of what transpired on the 14th of February.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes. And then can I get the second to this minutes of February the 14th? That was the Valentine's Day. And I remember that we also wish for the birthday girl who was Kate on that day. So she's no longer a birthday girl now. She's old enough. She has adopted the minutes.
But Honorable Masangu is a birthday girl, if I still remember well.
That day of yours?
Today.
Today? I know.
She mentioned that last week. I don't know if it's not today. Oh, Friday. Friday, the 23rd.
Okay. Oh, shame. Sorry. Happy belated. Yeah? When is... it's still coming. Happy be coming birthday, Honorable Masango. We might not meet and celebrate for you, but you can bring the cake. You can bring the cake, even if it's later. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Then, are you seconding a birthday lady, girl birthday to come?
Yes, Chair, I would like to second the adoption of the minutes as adopted by...
born in February. Hey, there's a lot. We need to do a big party for ourselves. And just celebrate, even if it's the end of the month. Thank you very much, Honorable. Lindy? What else?
Okay. Chair, that's the end of the meeting agenda items for today. Chair, I think it's important to announce that this coming Friday we were scheduled to have a meeting to get responses from departments. The Department of Police communicated with me requesting that they have other commitments, so they won't be able to honor our invitation for the meeting on Friday. And for Department of Health, I've been struggling to get hold of the department. But in a nutshell, Shay, there will be no meeting because none of the departments are available to present before the committee. And we, Chairperson and myself, we just need to look at an alternative date as to where we can fit these two departments, Chair. So I wanted to announce that, Chairperson.
Was this going to be the Department of Police only that was going to present?
And the Department of Health, Chair.
You know, it delays our program, Linda. I'm concerned about that. Because we'll ever be late in following the program, and we don't know when can we have that opportunity for them. But there's nothing that we can do for now. Let's look forward and see what can we do. Thank you very much, members. Otherwise, the meeting has adjourned. Good luck for the week ahead and also the month ahead. Thank you ever so much. The meeting has adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks.
Thank you,
Chair.